Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
Welcome, welcome. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kuequitlam, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree/cjsfradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF, which is 2573. Welcome, welcome everyone to Slumber Party. We're here every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. My name's DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. Thank you so much for joining us on this rainy and very windy Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
We have, as usual, some lineup of music and nice topic that we'll get into later on. I think this one's a pretty good one, so
yeah, I'm excited to talk about it. It's a bit of a think piece, you could say.
I think we've been on a bit of a thinking run. We've been doing all sorts of similar topics lately, so maybe this will connect all the previous episodes somehow together as well. But we'll start off with the music as usual. So this first song is by Shy Girl, and the song is Firefly, but it's the Kingdom edit from the album Nymph O. So enjoy.
Let me know. Easy to break away, make a little change, some nice I'd rather be. Look what your charm has done to me. Ain't no sugar water run through my veins. It's raining so hard. Look at my face. Look what your charm has done to me. Ain't no sugar water run through my veins. I'm telling you, I'm all over the place. I'm telling you, I'm a horse with no race. Sweet darling, is it night or day? Darling, can you say my name? Can't you see I'm losing my head because of you, because of you?
Greetings, netizens. Join us every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific for Bitcoover FM, featuring the best in chiptune, video game soundtracks, synthesized music, history of electronic instruments, and more, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We'll see you in the virtual plaza, and remember to synthesize with nostalgia.
Welcome back. This is Slumber Party. And I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. I don't know why I just slurred my words.
I kind of started that weird as well. This is CJ's FM. Yeah, I was like, FM. Kind of missed that.
I was like, wait a minute. Where are we right now?
Anyway, so that last song was Detour by La Securité. And before that was Sugar Water by Prince Fatty, Mungo's High Five, and Holly Cook. I really love that song right now. It is a bit strange, but there's something so addictive about it. And before that was Butterflies by FC UKers. And before that was Figurines by She's Green. So we kind of ran through quite a few songs there, but we are back and we are ready to get started on our topic, which is based on this article. And it's called Why Is Everything Sold to Us as a Means to an End Rather Than an End in Itself? And it is by Julian Baggini. I just saw this article in The Guardian the other day and I started reading into it. I was like, this is kind of revolutionary in a way. But it argues that basically, it argues that the instrumentalization of social connection is immoral. And the author like begins by talking about how so much of the things that we have motivation to pursue are because they're instrumentalized and they're kind of marketed towards us as pursuing it for an ulterior goal rather than just for the sake of doing it in itself. So I think the example was art and how actually like consuming art is good for your mental health or something, or like learning is good for future job opportunities if you're like acquiring a degree. And it's all kind of for the sake of like wealth, well-being, and health.
Yeah. The definition for instrumentalization for this, so for all that we're trying to strive to do this, like, to get this good, it's usually defined as health, wealth, social success, or even like psychological well-being. And these things in itself, the author argues that these don't have intrinsic value, and that when we try to pursue these things, they're not, it's not good to pursue something that is trying to act like and it's something with intrinsic value, but it doesn't. So essentially also the term for intrinsic value is also that something has value in its own sake and not for something else. So to kind of tie in an example for this as well, for example, liking nature, you know, people are being told, go outside, go touch some grass, go take a walk in the woods and, you know, put your feet in the ground and this will help you with your mental health and you'll relieve stress and you can reduce your blood pressure. All these health benefits, you know. And this is not really doing the actual purpose of in appreciating nature, because you shouldn't be using it to benefit your well-being. And it's more for so that intrinsic value of nature would be something like, you know, exploring and understanding the history of the nature you stand on kind of thing. Not like, oh, if I stand on this ground, I'm going to drop my blood pressure kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. It's very kind of robotified in a way. Like, it's very mechanical the way that a lot of us approach just kind of regular things in our life that do have intrinsic value. And that just disconnects us from the meaning of those things, like even friendships or talking to strangers. Like, I was in a class this semester for psychology and it's called the Science of Happiness. And basically we're just like reviewing a lot of the literature on happiness. and how, you know, talking to a stranger versus not talking to one on a commute will have all of these emotional and affective benefits. And the longer you talk to them, the more benefits you'll have. So you see this data and you're like, okay, maybe I should go out and like talk to a stranger because of these ulterior benefits, rather than, oh, maybe it would be nice to just have a little bit of human connection for the sake of having, you know, more casual human connection. And that is why there is like this kind of gap or divide between the actual value and the intrinsic value and meaning versus like what it gives to us in a, it's hard to explain. Like, this concept is kind of hard to explain because it's
a bit abstract.
But yeah, it's just like the separation of what it does for us and then what it is, basically.
Yeah, that intrinsic value thing kind of, it took a while for me to actually grasp that around my head, because in a way, it's like, how do we label something that's intrinsic, that has intrinsic value, versus something extrinsically? Because, for example, with the art thing, like, sure, we have art like paintings that people do because they want to self-express themselves, and that is something that's, you know, an intrinsic value of painting. But then at the same time, people create art in films or dramas or books, and these things are used to help others understand and take, you know, and understand the world better, to that helps their own well-being. So technically, wouldn't that be an extrinsic value, because it's trying to, the that form of art, like the film, is trying to be an instrument?
That's, yeah.
So it got a little muddy, and the author did also address that as well, that in real life this is a lot harder to define. But in general, this is something that is very noticeable. And for me, is like reading this, I was like, holy cow, I've been reading and trying to do a lot of these things.
Yeah. And I think the author also says that like extrinsic and intrinsic value can be, you know, existing alongside one another. It's like a specific quote, but I'm not sure if I can find it. That really like cleared things up for me, but I'll try to find it. Maybe I'll do it after the break if I can. But anyways, yeah, so it's, yeah.
I mean,
I'm just trying to find
one. I think another example could help for the intrinsic extrinsic values is to just give more examples. So I thought that for the, you know, physical and mental health part, which is something that we as humans, we think is something good, like as a good that we want to benefit ourselves with. So like going out to nature and improving our physical health and mental health, for example. And this itself is not intrinsically valuable. Even though health itself, everyone says this is the most important thing in your life. Like, you should prioritize your health above all other means. But the thing is that health, as I said, is not intrinsically valuable, and it only enables us to access other things that are more valuable. This is what is argued. And we only prize health based off that the alternative is pain and suffering, which, of course, we don't want to do. And the other one being that good health can allow us to bring meaning into our lives. Like, we can go walk to the park, for example. So it's not really itself doing anything. It's just helping not have these other factors come into play, kind of thing. And one example was that I could see, that I've seen in other class, like some other article, was the disability paradox that goes along with this, because there is a phenomenon, which this paradox is, that people with disabilities rate their well-being higher than expected, you know, given their health conditions. So people are like, well, it seems like you have this debilitating, you know, condition. Like, shouldn't you be unhappy? And they're saying that when in sickness, that they've actually found what truly matters. So, you know, sure, they're, you know, physically handicapped, but at the same time, they found meaning in being loved and the relationships around them. And so it's like, well, is health that important then? And does that mean that there's no intrinsic value? Which, I mean, that supports for the argument.
Yeah. And along with health, they're also saying wealth is another thing that is enabling you to pursue certain things. And just pursuing wealth and money and financial success for the sake of it is not really a good thing to do either, because it's never just for the sake of it. It's always like
what it can bring you.
Yeah, what it can bring you, because it's about prestige as well as like this feeling of success, or maybe even being able to like buy your loved one something or be able to have more free time to do what you need to do. But just having money in itself is not like useful. And same with health, mental and physical, like having good physical and mental health, that just gives you like a baseline of actually being able to do stuff that you want to do. So it's not just like that's enough in itself to have value, I guess, is also what it's trying to argue.
Yeah. Another one was also, I feel, a bit more controversial based off that everyone goes for this idea, is that the good of happiness is not intrinsically valuable, which I was like, what?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could do an activity that brings you the chemical feeling of happiness, but you're not actually appreciating the activity yourself, which is the argument.
Mm-hmm. And I think the author also was saying that it's not good to be happy ignorantly in a relationship when you're being cheated on, or yeah, if, like, you know, something that is morally wrong, like other people's suffering that's like inflicted on them by you, brings you happiness, like that is not good either. But I also don't understand the difference between like, oh, this is morally wrong versus this is not intrinsically valuable, because if it brings them happiness to see other people suffer, isn't that intrinsically valuable to themselves? They're
the
like
paradox.
Just enjoying it for the sake of enjoying it. It's not like, I guess they're instrumentalizing other people to get happiness, but wouldn't you do that in like positive situations as well, like
capitalism? Like, you're happy that you're exploiting workers because you get more money.
This is actually kind of difficult when you get down to it, though.
Happiness, yeah, the happiness one, I was scratching my head on. I'm not entirely sure for this one, but I do see the point for the other ones, and further research will be needed.
Yeah, I think the lines are a bit blurred between, like, what's morally right versus what's intrinsically valuable, and it seems like it can be kind of interchangeable, but
I think
not, in
yeah,
my opinion.
Because the author is taking, you know, using Kant's deontology, one of the philosophers, and this is a very specific area of ethics. Obviously, there's like a billion perspectives of what people think is right and wrong, and this is just one of them. So it's like, I think this is one of the rebuttals against deontology, is that how do we define when someone has moral worth? Or like, do animals have moral worth? Like, is it only a point when you have consciousness that you have moral worth? Because then it's like, well, what about people who are cognitively disabled? Do they not have moral worth?
And it's also so subjective on top of that, because like his actual Kant's like categorical imperative is you should treat humanity always at the same time as an end, never nearly a means. And that's when you're acting in alignment with like moral righteousness. But like, back to the example of like, you know, you're inflicting suffering on other people. Can that be treating them as an end as well as a means for your own happiness? Like, that's where I get confused, rather like, then you're being nice to someone versus being cruel to them, and they both bring you happiness. I guess it depends on how the receiver is feeling too, in that sense.
Like, should you just be your true personality, kind of, like, let's say in a more milder case, like,
yeah, we don't need to keep going on this,
but in like a milder case for that same situation, not saying you're inflicting harm on someone, but let's say like, oh, you don't feel like, you're meeting a friend and you're feeling kind of grumpy that day, do you just continue being grumpy so you can satisfy not feeling like you're obligated to be a good person to them? Or do you have to surpass your grumpy feelings and make sure that the other person is feeling okay and that they're happy? I feel like that's a milder case of that same situation that's like there's no answer.
Yeah, it's like it's hard because it's also about intention. Like it can be like the same action, but it depends on how you intend it to be. Like if you're intending it for instrumentalization, then apparently that's like morally wrong. But if you're intending and just doing the act for the sake of doing it, that's better.
I guess this also goes into virtue ethics in a way, because it's like Aristotle argued, you know, as long as you intend to be okay, like do the action morally right, then it's fine. But then it's like all these philosophers, all these guys out here, you know, like who is right? No one's right.
Yeah, there's so much conflicting. And I don't think I personally agree with the fact that the only thing that is morally right or like the main imperative is treating people as an end, as a means, like as well as a means, because I think that can be interpreted in many different ways. And there are situations in when they can be treating someone as an end and a means, but not be necessarily the right thing. But aside from that,
yeah, that's only more the happiness, some of the specific goods. But yeah, back to the more, you know, money and physical health part, I think it's more clear cut.
Yeah.
Because it gets a little murky with the happiness part. But, you know, I've seen so much instrumentalization everywhere. And yeah. I didn't realize it. I honestly, even yesterday, I was searching up the benefits of meditation. I was like, reduce blood pressure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, reduce my risk of dementia by, you know, one day. Awesome. And then I'm meditating and I'm like, why do I not feel better kind of way?
Yeah. Especially when you're doing it for those reasons, it might not have the same effect as like the people who are in those studies who are just doing it for the sake of doing it. And then like, okay, now they're reporting better health benefits. But if you're just doing it and being like, okay, I'm just waiting for my hormones to start spiking, like that might not be working. And like this is happening more as well because I think natural science and social science are exploding even more, like with the amount of studies that we have and the amount of information that we can glean about the human body. But then with those studies, there's a lot of scientific reductionism. Like we know so much about how our body works that we trust what papers say about our body more than what our own body is telling us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I do think we have already kind of built in systems in ourselves that desire things like exercise and talking to people, but then we don't act on them and we trust. I mean, we might still act on them, but we're like, oh, but, you know, this is justification for acting on this now. Like, now I have a reason rather than just doing it for the sake of doing it.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with the scientific method in general is that we've all been taught from elementary school, you know, the five-step method, hypothesis, start from the very molecule of information and we build from there. So we take things like, you know, reduce blood pressure, thus you are now happy, thus good life kind of thing. And we take all these research studies and we think that we can find good for ourselves by trusting them, even though that we should be looking at a broader, and there have been scholars arguing for a broader perspective and look at this more holistically, because I feel like we should be listening to our own bodies as well, because we aren't just statistics. You know, you would know your body better than, you know, maybe 100 study participants you've never met in your life and also have no relation to any stage of life you're at right now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so silly too, is like how much science has kind of overanalyzed everything. And there are definitely merits and values to these articles that are promoting like health benefits. Like if someone's looking for something specific and they need to improve this aspect of their health, like that might be more helpful. But when we're talking about like social behavior and stuff like that, it gets to be kind of like a weird gray area where it's like, talking to people is supposed to benefit me, but then you kind of discard the benefits. Like, why are we talking about it as like a benefit? It's very transactional. Oh. It's very transactional.
It is crazy. I've definitely, outside of that class as well, because there's a lot of our public health authorities. Same with United States. I believe it's the health ministry. They're all warning everyone about the effects of social isolation and that people are more isolated than ever. And thus, we have to talk to more people. We have to go do these things to improve our health. And it's all fallen to a health perspective to go meet people and talk with them, you know, talk with a stranger kind of thing, because it can do these things for us, which is, we are then treating it as an external, you know, not an intrinsic value anymore, because instead of actually concerning for our friends, you know, like making us more aware for their needs or that we maybe enjoy a collective experience of doing something together. No, it's like, oh, we can improve our health by seeing this person, which is so messed up. I definitely did not realize this until reading this article. So this was a big game changer for me.
And that disconnects us even more, too, because when you're seeing it through, and this is also like taking a more extreme view. Like, I don't think everyone's seeing social interactions through this lens of what are like the benefits for me. But like, there are those thoughts, right, of like, oh, okay, I've spent like 6 hours today socializing, because I had a project I had to measure how much time I was socializing and like doing all these things and how much it increased my own happiness. So I have like this firsthand experience, and I did not feel great about that project either, because you just feel like this pressure and you're like, okay, like
monetizing friendship,
trying to like glean as much as you can from the friendship, like the emotional benefits for yourself. Like, it just takes away the genuine connection that you have with other people when you're like focusing too much on that.
That is a very dystopian project.
It's very dystopian.
That sounds very dystopian.
I know. And like, it did make me happier. Like, I did see like the results in general were like, yeah, okay, exercise, hobbies, gratitude, spending time with people, like they make you happier, but it's just like the intention behind it does feel kind of sinister.
Maybe something morally wrong in yourself, even though you feel the upper layer of it feeling happy. I feel like there's that hidden little, you know, avocado pit. I don't know why I can't think of anything right now.
Avocado
pit. I don't know, avocado pit it is. Mm-hmm. That, you know, health is on top of, but our actual inner morals are in there and something feels off. That's what I think.
It feels fake, I think. Yeah. And then, yeah, so we're doing this more because I think science is pushing it more than ever, because we have more information as well than ever that we've had before on the human body and our experiences.
We haven't been killing each other in years, and so we've got so much time on our hands now.
Oh, we've been killing each other. That's something for another topic.
But as much?
Maybe.
I think I've been watching too much Game of Thrones lately. That's why I'm like, oh, well, thank God I'm alive.
Compared to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, compared to Game of Thrones.
We've been killing each other, but people have been killing each other. But anyway, capitalism, I want to say, is like probably another major factor in why we're seeing things through this perspective more. Because it's very much so like a consumer mindset in a way, too. Like, what we have is never enough. It can always be better. We can always be doing more. We're always trying to maximize. Like, the common theme that I see in this instrumentalization process is maximizing like the benefits that you can have. And it takes away the joy from actually just being there, being present in the moment when you're thinking about like, oh, this is maximizing like my blood pressure rate or whatever.
And they profit.
Yeah. There's more self-care being pushed, there's more fitness, and it's all like for the sake of well-being, right? But at the same time, like, people are profiting off of that, like,
and the people who click on the articles for the health benefits of this particular activity too.
There's like ulterior motives that probably even, you know, some scientific articles are pushing, like, this is more healthy for you, and then products can be like, oh, research has proven that this is like better for you, so like go buy this like fitness contraption or like this face mask. instead of just, you know, doing self-care things that are just good for you and make you feel good. So yeah, that's another point I feel about capitalism is very influential on this.
For this one, I also thought for more broader perspective that I think that instrumentalizing all these things and saying that, oh, using this to benefit us, is that it feels easy to us because it gives us a sense of control in our lives. Like, we can control our health, like we can control our happiness, kind of thing, when we can't. We cannot. And so it just gives us this illusion that we can, and that, you know, we are independent people, but in reality, we all rely on each other, even though no one wants to admit this, because down to even our genetics, like we grow up and we are born into the world with a random set of cards and we can't choose anything. And so I think having this sense of, you know, oh, I can run more and I'll feel better and I can live a day longer, like, or wear this face mask and, you know, my skin's better, physical health, blah, blah, blah. It just gives us this sense, like, we are the controllers, but we can't.
Yeah, it's very individualistic, right? Like, I'm maximizing myself as an individual, like, using other things as a means to better myself. And, like, that is a very individualistic stance on things. And like DJ Coco said, like, we are naturally interdependent. And by removing this intrinsic kind of need and orientation that humans have, like, it really does, again, like, it just disconnects us from each other even more. Like, oh, we're so socially isolated, there's all these studies on it, right? But then when you see it, like, I need to reach out to have seven connections per week, and like, so this will improve my mental health or something. Yeah. Like, maybe it will, like, it probably will. We're not saying that these things aren't gonna help certain aspects of your health, and it's not like you shouldn't listen to the science, but it's more just so, like, the motivations feel kind of skewed now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like this would be also interesting. I'm not sure how this would be perceived differently in a more collectivist, or done differently in a collectivist society, because all across the world, we are all being fed the same kind of messages for this, is what we believe. Because, you know, Western individualist culture, like, you take control of your life, do these things for your health. But then also in a collectivist society, I feel like they're doing things for other people that are also still instrumentalizing things, you know? Like,
yeah,
make your family happy, but that means get a good job and also make money, which is also something that
That's
we
true.
Are still instrumentalizing.
But so, make money, what's the common theme here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this is just I don't even think this could be just a Western thing. This is just a world problem, a human problem that we all have. And what do we do about this? You know,
it's natural, though. Like, it is natural to want to, like, try to understand ourselves. Like, that is what a lot of the science on behavior is doing, is like, and connecting behavior and health benefits. Like, we're trying to understand ourselves, but it's like too much. Like, we already can understand ourselves just by listening to what we want and what we value, like, not as getting advice from other scientific sources and be like, oh yeah, this is, I'm gonna base, like, my life on this.
Yeah.
And obviously you should exercise. Like, we're not saying that you shouldn't do any of these things that bring you health benefits, but maybe just do it because you're human, not because you're, like, this robot who operates on, like, percentages and numbers.
Yeah.
And statistics.
Great point. Great point.
But anyways, we should wrap up this conversation, because we only have around 10 minutes left.
Yeah, a little bit more abstract and also not very many solutions to this. I think what the author wanted to leave everyone with is that, you know, obviously we should appreciate things for their own value instead of what they may bring us. That's the main message. But then it's like, well, okay, how do you do that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's more so, I think it's just enjoying the small everyday things in life as well as the big. And that I think gratitude would also help a lot. In the most case, I mean, some people have really terrible lives that they shouldn't even have to go through. But in general, gratitude can help with this. And even just being grateful for the relationships that you have, like the people that the friends and family you surround yourself with are enough in and of themselves, and that they shouldn't serve you any further function to justify having time and care on them. Like, they shouldn't be serving you to, you know, make your social image look better, kind of thing.
Yeah, and along with gratitude, one thing that I was thinking about during reading this article, I was like, I feel like a lot of this kind of instrumentalization can be solved if you're just more present in the moment. Like, you're not thinking about all these external, like, pieces of information. If you're just kind of grounding yourself in your body and how you feel in that moment, I think your body is very wise and will know what feels good and what doesn't, basically. And, you know, it's a pretty good compass, but at the same time, some people can't trust what their body thinks is, you know, good or not. So that's a more complicated issue as well.
Isn't that instrumentalization? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's like we should get the most benefit by knowing instrumentalization. That's what I feel like this is getting into. Round circle here.
Maybe we're overthinking, because there's not really a solution anyway to this. It's more just awareness.
The solution is that there's no solution, and that we should be comfortable or not, or we should face the discomfort that we know nothing.
Okay, that's an interesting point.
I think it's that time of night now. I'm like, let's wrap this up.
None of this.
We
is
know
working.
Nothing, everyone. Good night.
No takeaways today. Just something to think about.
I feel like I'm had a little paradigm shift in my head after this essay, because I think it's a great thing to consider. And maybe you'll take something away from this too. Maybe you won't, but I'm glad that the article can get more recognition about this. Very good. Very good article.
Mm-hmm. If you want to read it, again, it's on The Guardian. It's by Julian Baghini, I think.
We'll also link it in the description.
Yeah.
If you check out the show on CGSF.
Anyways, thank you so much for listening. We'll be here next week as well. Up next is Lynn's open mic, and then Vancouver with Connor. And yeah, the next song is Always Treat You Right by Kadia El Hanafi. So I hope y'all enjoy. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
still